The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors of this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Cornell University or its employees.
Welcome to another episode of the Inclusive Excellence Podcast. Today, we're speaking with our colleague in the Department of Inclusion and Belonging, Administrative Coordinator Lauren Frederick. We will speak with Lauren about her professional and personal journeys and the various identities she holds that most impact her day-to-day life and work. In honor of this year's Women's History Month theme, Lauren will also share how her life experiences have really informed her perspectives and commitment to creating equity, inclusion, and belonging for everyone. My name is Toral Patel.
And my name is Erin Semper-Chase.
And you are listening to the Inclusive Excellence Podcast.
Well, Lauren, we're so happy that you get to be with us today in the studio recording this. But we know you well, but obviously our listeners might not. So can you just start by introducing yourself and if you want to share what pronouns you use and a little bit more about your role with our office and at Cornell?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. I'm so excited to be here. This is a new way of interacting with my colleagues. So yes, I'm Lauren Frederick, she, her pronouns, and I'm the administrative coordinator for the Department of Inclusion and Belonging. Most of my role is providing the glue or connecting pieces to a lot of the work that our team does. I support the AVP of our department, as well as Erin with the Inclusive Excellence Summit.
Big time. Big time.
A lot of pieces there. And anything else that comes up, especially with events and a lot of colleague network group opportunities and connecting events.
Yeah. And as Erin mentioned, that we've had the pleasure of working with you for several years, and I've had the pleasure of working with you even longer than that. And so can you just maybe for our audience just share a little bit about your journey, the path that you took to kind of get to the role that you're in now?
Yeah, so it has been quite a bit of a journey. Cornell-wise, I started at Cornell. This is my sixth year. Mm-hmm. My first role at Cornell was in a department in one of the colleges, and then I moved to this central role. So I've been doing administrative work now 6 years, and that's been really a great opportunity. Prior to Cornell, I was working for another nonprofit organization in the Finger Lakes. Again, a little bit of HR work and administrative work. And then way down the road, I was a wine club manager as well as a nanny. And I've spent many years working in preschool, so working with young children. I really do miss that work. You know, I feel like children really have the opportunity to learn in the moment. They like making mistakes for children is they just move on.
Yeah.
It's much different working with adults. It's much different. So I oddly enough, I do use some of those skills in my role still.
I don't even know if I knew that you used to work in preschools. I didn't even know that one. I definitely remember you being a wine manager because that's when I knew I was really going to like you when I learned that. But that's very interesting about the preschool experience, especially to hear you talk about how you actually apply some of that to your current role, which is now making me realize, see a whole new way of how you handle me.
Right.
I'm gaining a new appreciation of that. Okay.
Yeah, I guess I didn't either. I mean, I knew you had been a nanny in your professional journey, as well as I've known about your other nonprofit work. Mm-hmm. But I guess I didn't know about the preschool either. So it is kind of neat to learn more about you.
Yeah, I it was actually a preschool I worked at for... Oh, I want to say it was three years or so, and it was in Cayuga Heights, so it was near campus. Okay. And I actually worked with a lot of, you know, professors' children, so I really got to know the Cornell community. That was my first kind of exposure to the Cornell community, was working with the children of the professors.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of shows you how wide the Cornell connections really can be, right? It's not just necessarily on the campus, which alone is fairly large in itself, but that there's all of these additional connections that are outside of campus as well.
Really neat. Okay, so we've now learned that you are, you know, were a former preschool educator. You are a wine enthusiast.
Yeah.
We learned that. But of course, there's other identities that you most likely hold near and dear in addition to your job. So we'd like to hear more about that. You know, what do you consider to be some of your most salient identities? And, you know, how do they sort of show up in your life?
Sure. Yeah. So how I, you know, started working in the preschool field was I graduated in a recession. So I was a first generation college student. And throughout my college experience, I didn't realize the importance of mentorship and finding, you know, trying to make those connections to find work once you graduate. I thought, oh, I've worked so hard for this degree, I'll just find a job. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, someone will see like, oh, my gosh, like, you definitely worked hard throughout, you know, your college experience. You worked and, you know, got a degree at the same time. And it wasn't that simple. It wasn't as easy as just, you know, showing someone a resume and saying, look, this is everything that I've done. I know you want to hire me. There's a lot more to that. And I believe that, you know, it doesn't come naturally to somebody that hasn't learned those skills. There's skills that you learn. So I ended up working 4 different jobs out of graduation, and I kind of started a journey there. And that first generation experience, you know, follows you throughout all of your jobs and professions. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I realized the impact of that until, you know, I'm in a professional role, trying to figure out where I want to, you know, grow into next, and having, you know, just, it's hard to connect the dots and really sell yourself when you haven't, you're still learning some of those skills while you're working.
I can tell you, Lauren, that I really relate to this first generation background that you mentioned, because I was laughing to myself as you were talking, because I had a similar experience. I am also a first generation college graduate in my family. And in fact, my parents actually moved to this country so that we could get a better education. And I remember, like, every graduation, high school, for college, every graduation was more important to my parents than it was to me. Mm-hmm. And so, like, actually, I actually walked in some of the graduation ceremonies only for them. Mm-hmm. And I had a very similar thought that, oh, you know, I'll just finish school. I'll get some amazing grades. Mm-hmm. I finished college, my bachelor's degree in 3.5 years, and thought, I was like, okay, somebody surely must see how hard I've worked, right? Because I finished this in 3.5 years. And then I didn't know what to do. I was like, oh, I was so lost, because very similar to you, but I didn't have any connections. Yeah. I didn't have anybody to guide me as to what are my next steps. And so that's how I got my master's degree, because I'm like, the education is like the one thing I know how to do. So I'll just continue that, because I don't know what else I'm doing. So that's actually the sole reason why I applied for my master's degree and got it, was because I was like so lost after graduation that I had no idea what I was doing. And then I made sure that my brother and sister didn't have that, right? And so as the first one to go through this experience, I made sure that they took the right steps and had done what they needed to do throughout their college career to kind of get that job when they graduated.
I really like us talking about this, because working at Cornell, we hear and talk a lot about the first generation student experience, which, as Lauren just illustrated, that's really important. But I don't know that we always think about how that follows you when you're entering into the career world, the job world. And I think that what you're really illustrating, both of you, not necessarily that you didn't have the skills to network and sell yourself, but you hadn't been modeled that.
Right.
you didn't have the benefit of generations before you that could be able to tell you how to hook yourself up with the right, quote, right people, and, you know, how to get your foot in the door and that sort of thing. Can you do it? Of course you can. But you don't, if you don't know that that's what you're supposed to do, and nobody's telling you or modeling that, then, that's going to end up leading into some uncertainty with trying to build your career.
I also grew up working class. So, you know, blending the first generation and working class together in the U.S., you know, you are essentially just taught to work harder. Just keep working. Work. Like, if you work, it's going to pay off. And I'm sure there's truth to that. Like, I have worked hard and it has paid off. I think it's taken me longer. Because I haven't had a way to, as you had said, like, it hasn't been modeled how to advocate for myself in a professional way, especially with, like, you know, salary negotiation. Like, all of that just feels really uncomfortable to me. And I think that also goes into my, you know, one of my other identities, you know, being like a woman and a single mom. Like, it's, for whatever reason, stepping into that space where you're putting up boundaries and you're saying, hey, I deserve this, or I've worked really hard to get here and I'd like to, you know, go this path or that. Like, it's really hard to put that into words and really feel comfortable, you know, having a strong voice. For whatever reason that is, it could be the patriarchy, it could be other isms and ways that our society is designed. Right. But, you know, that isn't necessarily something that I grew up with, is having a loud, you know, a loud voice. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. a really uncomfortable space for me. And I think, you know, just the last few years between the pandemic and then also going through a divorce has really helped me find my voice mm-hmm. In a very, you know, difficult and exhausting situation. Yeah. But it really has given me the opportunity to dig deep and realize that a lot of the motivation, a lot of the advocacy comes within myself, mm-hmm. you know, and learning those skills, because I don't have another choice. I have to.
Right, right. That's very powerful. What I'm hearing you say, Lauren, is that you've been put into some unfortunate situations over the last couple of years that have really sort of made you have to rely more on yourself. Not, I mean, you've always, I can tell you've always been an independent person, but, you know, you've been in situations where you realize, if I don't speak up, if I don't speak up for what I need or what my kids need or what needs to happen at work, then it's not going to happen. But to your point, for all kinds of reasons, if that isn't something you've been used to doing, it's very scary to do that, I would think.
It is, you know, because I think, at least, you know, my own experience through divorce is you are not refining yourself, but, you know, realizing, oh, like, there's some things that maybe I should have done differently, or, you know, I need to explore this more. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I remember so many nights of reading self-help books going, I know I'm going to find an answer, like yeah. something that makes this easier for me and my kids and everything. And I realized, okay, like, there actually isn't an answer. The answer is to really just work on your inner self and work on, yeah. you know, your needs. And I think that from my own experience, that felt like really selfish for me. Mm. That felt like I was being really selfish to, you know, really focus on myself so frequently. And I realized that it was work I had to do. And I do. I meet with a therapist once a week, and we walk through quite a bit. I also, you know, another identity is, you know, I'm neurodiverse. So I have anxiety, OCD, ADHD. So a lot of that has played into this this party of the last few years of trying to, like, navigate single momming, two little ones, a three-year-old and a seven-year-old. Working full time, and then also having really big anxiety attacks throughout primarily the divorce, but also going into the divorce was the pandemic. So sure. I was home pregnant. My daughter at the time was two or so, and her daycare closed. Mm-hmm, and yeah. That my husband at the time, you know, he was an essential worker and he had to be at work. So it was just me at home, pregnant with my toddler, trying to work at the same time. Oh, and I remember working, I'd get up at 4 a.m. Monday through Friday, so I could work from 4 a.m. to 7 or whenever my daughter got up, would take a break to, like, you know, give her breakfast, connect with her a little bit, log back in. It got really confusing trying to figure out, okay, when am I working for Cornell? When am I working for my kid? Like, right. And I mean, I think in the beginning, I know so many caregivers thought, okay, this will just be a few weeks.
Yeah.
This will just be a month. This will just be, okay, I guess it's going to be 2 months.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're at 3 months.
Yeah.
And I'm just, like, sitting here thinking to myself, can I really do this? Like, right. Can I mentally and physically, like, keep doing this? Right. But I couldn't take FMLA because I was pregnant and I needed that for, you know, my now son.
Right.
Yeah. So I didn't really have a lot of options. I used a lot of my paid time off to supplement my time watching my daughter throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, you know, I was drained on paid time off. I couldn't use FMLA. And then there weren't any other options. I just had to keep going.
Yeah.
So
again, it goes back to what you mentioned earlier. Just keep working harder. Yeah. Right? Like, you'll get through the other side of this. It's the same motto that's been shared with a lot of us, like, throughout our lives.
But that's when you, I mean, you had to, at some point, realize doing all that, hey, you know, hard work alone doesn't quite cut it because, you know, my sanity is on the line here. I need some other supports. I need some other systems, as would anyone. I mean, what you're describing is just unbelievable how, you know, you got through all that. And that's nothing to make light of. That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite an experience that I never thought I would be in. I'm mm-hmm. as all of us, right. You know, throughout that period. And, you know, and then moving into the divorce, I believe I left. It was August. It was warm. And I had my son was about, I think about 10 months old or so. And my daughter was going to go into kindergarten that fall. So we moved in with my parents and I didn't have daycare for my son, so I was just trying to, at that point, I believe I went to part-time mm-hmm. while I was trying to, like, sort things out, like, move our things and kind of get, you know, our footing, apply my daughter to school. I had to get all new doctors, dentists. Like, it was just so many logistics mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. It was really overwhelming. And then you throw in, you know, my anxiety and OCD to the situation. And there are times I'd put the kids to bed. I would just be at home, like on the phone with somebody, and my body would just start shaking out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm not sure what's going on. I can't stop shaking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your body is going to tell you when you've done too much.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, I think. And so I, you know, you do the best you can in those situations. I, you know, work with my therapist again once a week. I also just realized I had to really speak up for myself and say to my supervisor, you know, I have to take a day tomorrow. I just can't focus. Mm-hmm. I I had a really hard weekend. There were a couple weekends where I remember just feeling so drained that I was nauseated. Like, I just, mm-hmm. I couldn't eat. Mm-hmm. I had to just sleep for like 2 days. I had to call a friend and say, hey, can you take my daughter? Mm-hmm. My mom would take my son. I'm like, I just can't, you know, my whole body aches. Yeah. I can't think. And I just know it was just, it's been a long road between both of those big situations, experiences.
I think what's also kind of very unfortunate, but also a reality is, you know, a couple of things that you identified that you knew you needed to do in order to be able to maintain and keep going was things like go to part-time or maybe take a day off even if you didn't have the time, which means you're going unpaid.
Yeah.
Right? In both those cases, you had to sacrifice, you know, making money. Really, you had to sacrifice money in order to just try to regain some control, you know, over the situation. And that's unfortunate, really unfortunate that that had to be that way. But I think it's important to mention that because it's not enough to just say push through all the time, right? We can't just always, you were wise to recognize, like you said, what your body was telling you, what your emotions were telling you. And we have to also acknowledge that that also came at a price. You know, a little price in terms of you having to take a pay cut for a short period of time.
Yeah, and you know, I think that I couldn't have asked for a better team of colleagues as well, you know, through this whole situation. You know, Toril's been there since the beginning. I remember calling Toril saying, I'm leaving today.
Yeah.
I remember. She's like, oh, okay, and whatever you need. Mm-hmm. And I think I also recall a meeting, Erin, where I joined the Zoom like in tears and you're like, do you just need a minute? And I'm like, I'll be okay. I just like, I have to keep working. Sometimes that was like a good distraction mm-hmm. from, you mm-hmm. know, everything going on with the divorce as well. And just the pressures of motherhood mm-hmm. and working, like trying to find that work-life balance, proofs, what they say. it's just I think that I've really learned to just take each day as it comes. Mm. And then I just always have a backup plan. you know, so that's why I moved back home. So I have my mom around the corner, my brother, and my sister. So mm-hmm. if something comes up, I can ask my mom if she's not available. I, you know, tap in with my sister. And, you know, the importance of family and friends and people supporting you through these difficult, you know, points in your life is just, you really feel it. You can't do it alone. For sure. I couldn't. I couldn't do it alone. I probably would have lost my job.
Yeah, I remember as a team, we kind of celebrated every little win that you had yeah. during that time, mm-hmm. however small it was. Just to, mm-hmm. you know, just for us to share that we're still here, mm-hmm. However you need us to be here mm-hmm. through that journey that you had to take.
And that was really impactful too, because I think, you know, you celebrate a marriage, you celebrate engagements, you celebrate all those big milestones. But, you know, I was celebrating that point in my life, you know, because it was a long time. It was a lot of work. Yeah. And, you know, I was choosing to kind of find some silver lining in mm-hmm. some of those situations. Mm-hmm. So that's not always easy. It takes a lot of work.
I think what you said earlier is really important, too. With a lot of these things that you've been talking about, that you felt selfish focusing on yourself, mm-hmm. right? And that word, right, selfish, that's the word that's in it, right? Self. So we are conditioned to think that it is selfish to focus on yourself. But I'd like to think that what you've really been illustrating is why it was necessary. You know, why there were times when it was necessary for you to focus on yourself so that you could give all of your best self to your kids, first and foremost, you know, your family, your job, so forth. Again, it came at, you know, some cost, but you kind of recognize, yeah, I have to. This isn't about being selfish. This is what's going to make me better for everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true. And I think that kind of goes a little bit back to, you know, my other, you know, identity, you know, being working class, first gen is... Mm. Asking for help is really also uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, because it's like, well, no, I'm a hard worker. I got this. Yeah. Like, I got this. Yeah, I'm going to prove to you all that I'm going to get through this and then some, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's at least another way that I grew up. And I feel that I really had to do that internal battle with myself to say, no, like, it's okay to ask for help. You can ask for help. And people want to help. I remember we all got COVID, so the kids and I, right after my grandfather passed away, it was just like, really? So we all got COVID, and I remember I was trying to juggle the transition from work to, you know, having COVID for 5 days and having to stay home and take care of the kids and myself and everything. And I remember a colleague who I don't even know said, oh, I hope you take care of yourself. I can make soup. I'm a really good soup maker. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, thank you so much. And then literally all my friends, I think I got four bowls of soup, different kinds of soup. Like, I had soup for days. I had chicken noodle soup. I had one of my friends made like a star shaped soup for the kids. I had so much soup. I was just like, see, this is like, people want to help. They want to help. And it does feel uncomfortable to say, oh my gosh, like I don't have any energy left. I'm at my limit. And people, you know, dropping food off. Yeah. Like my stoop.
I'm just suddenly having this image of hashtag soup is support.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, some of the things that you're just saying now, Lauren, is really resonating with me. The idea that, like, as a first generation and, like, to accept help is very, very difficult, because you're already, like, for all intents and purposes, like, for your family, like, breaking some of these barriers, and you've been doing it yourself, right? As the first one, you've done it without help, mm-hmm. right? And you've pushed through. And now you're kind of like standing here by yourself, right? Because this is as far as anybody in your family has gotten in terms of education, career, all of that. And so then to take that step back, which we initially think of as a step back, to ask for help in certain things, when in reality, it's not really a step back. You've just never had to do that before.
Right.
Because you've pushed through all of these barriers on your own. And when you've needed help to push through that barrier, it's a very hard thing to accept.
You know, it's so interesting, this conversation, because what you said resonated with me for totally other reasons.
Yeah.
Right? I was not first gen, and for most of my life, not working class. maybe when I was very little, my family was working class, but then it wasn't long before we were middle class. So I wasn't first gen, but I did grow up with having disabilities. And so some of what you're talking about, that, you know, being conditioned to think that you don't want to prove you can't do it, that you just have to keep working hard, like you said, with being working class. You have to keep being able to show you can handle it, you can do it, don't want anybody to see your weaknesses. That's what resonated with me,
yeah.
You know, for a totally different reason,
yeah.
You know, because of my life of living with disability. And so I just find it so interesting that there can be, we all have had our own specific life experiences that are unique to us,
mm-hmm.
but yet there's some common themes to what we have dealt with and what we've experienced, despite it being for different reasons.
Yeah. And Lauren, I know, like, we've talked about just the, all of the changes in your life, or, you know, starting with the pandemic and everything that you've gone through since then, and experiencing all of that through your neurodiversity, right? I would love to hear kind of your thoughts on, do you feel like there were any opportunities as you went through everything that you've gone through over the last few years?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, you know, I am the glass is half full type of gal.
Yeah.
So
yes, you are. I have to admit, it really annoys me sometimes, but that's okay. I'm married to somebody who's like that too, so I'm used to it.
So as I mentioned earlier too, the self-help books, I'm always researching, finding ways, you know, to get through things. And I think that predominantly, I had to just sit with some of the uncomfortable feelings,
mm-hmm, yeah.
To really get through them. And mm-hmm. I realized that that's good too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a good thing. You have to feel them. You have to go through that. But I do think that one of my opportunities has been working at Cornell. Cornell has just been so supportive and amazing through both of these, the pandemic and the divorce, and trying to figure out how to balance the work and care for my kids and myself, essentially, through that situation. And, you know, the childcare grant is amazing. As a single mom, I was blown away. It was really, a saving grace through some of these financial pieces of going from two incomes to one.
Mm-hmm.
The housing market, like, apartments are expensive. It was really helpful. And also, you know, just having, you know, a team and a supervisor that have just been so supportive through this. You know, if the kid's sick, oh, I can't make it in because I don't have a backup. But, you know, when the kids are sick, it's me. Like, I don't typically ask my mom or somebody to watch my kids when they're sick.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, having that compassion and support and just saying, oh, that's all right. Like, we got it. You know, take care of you and yourself. It's all right. Like, you know, because sometimes I'll be like, I'm going to check in throughout the day. They're like, no, don't check in throughout the day. Just go do what you need to do. And again, that's difficult for me, you know, because I need to prove, right, as a working class person,
mm-hmm.
I need to prove I can do it all,
mm-hmm.
right? So so I've had to really take a step back and go, nope, like, your job today is just mom,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. It's just a day or two. So there's, you know, having the opportunity to be a Cornell employee, being on the team that I'm on, has just been a really amazing opportunity in my life. And then, you know, the other opportunity that, you know, was going to college, I think was, mm-hmm. that was life changing for me as
mm-hmm.
well. You know, mm-hmm. having that opportunity to learn beyond my small rural town.
Yeah.
You know, having the opportunity to have a different perspective on different, you know, parts of the world and life. And I also studied abroad, and I lived in Seville, Spain for a semester. And that
mm-hmm.
was also, you know, an amazing opportunity that I didn't think I would have.
Mm-hmm. Just going to add one opportunity because, you know, a lot of times we wonder how the heck we got through things,
mm-hmm.
or continue to get through things. Well, you just do it,
yeah.
right? You just do it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't deserve some serious recognition and applause for what it took to go through it. So hats off to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would say, you know, yes, we can all say that we've gotten through the challenges of the pandemic, but
mm-hmm.
I can wholeheartedly say that you and probably there are a few others out there that experienced whole different set of challenges
yes.
during that exact same time
yeah.
than a lot of us did, right?
Yeah, and I mean, just as a quick aside, that's one reason why what you kept hearing during the height of COVID about how we're all in this together was just a load of crap. I mean, it's just not true. Yes, we all were experiencing the pandemic, but again, depending on, again, what your access to supports were, what type of systems you were connected to, what you experienced looked really different from one person to another. Yeah. So, Lauren, I really liked how you talked about remembering how much college was an opportunity for you because it allowed you to see the world beyond what you grew up with, you know, in your hometown. And, you know, I think that we'd be remiss to not acknowledge that this episode is actually going to be airing during the month of March, which is known as Women's History Month. And I happened to look up what the theme for Women's History Month was this year. By the way, I have no idea who decides what these themes are. But nonetheless, I trust Google and I just go with it. But yeah, it says that the theme is about appreciating women who advocate for equity, diversity, and inclusion. So, I mean, how unbelievably fortuitous that we are talking to you, that all three of us identify as women who are, you know, who really advocate for equity, inclusion, and diversity. And I feel like so much of what you talked about with your lived experiences, Lauren, really shows how striving for, you know, creating access and opportunities and inclusion for everyone has been something that has really been important to you personally. And I'm just wondering, what role do you think your life experiences have played in paving the way for you to end up actually working in the inclusion and belonging field?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. I think that I think it started young. I remember as a child, I just have always loved people and hearing people's stories. And, you know, a lot of how you learn about the world is through stories, you know, through history, through stories your grandparents share. You know, my grandfather was a World War II vet and, you know, he'd share stories. So I do know that I've always really been drawn to people, their journey and their stories. And then also as somebody who likes to advocate for change and better experiences, I've also said, oh, okay, like, let me hear this story. Like, well, why didn't we do that? Like, I've just been curious. Like, well, wait, why was it that way? Like, why don't we do better? Why, you know, how is that the experience that you've had? Like, that's not okay. And I feel that that's just always been something that's really been ingrained in, you know, in my heart. It could be my mom. My mom was always very caring of others. She would give the coat off her back, you know, to somebody. And I think just seeing that modeled, you know, as a child as well, a lot of my family's just really empathetic, caring people. And like, it kind of went with me. You know, and then in college, that's really where I started to see, as most people experience in college, you start to learn so much and your mind expands and you think about things in a different way. And I started seeing, you know, a lot of, as a women's studies minor, like, oh, the impact of patriarchy on all of us, the impact on ableism, the impact on all of those isms, and, you know, how we think about the world is so much shaped by the media that we're, you know, looking at or reading, that the family interactions, the other stories, all the different things that you've experienced throughout your life. And I started to realize that, you know, I had a passion for media. So my major was culture and communication. And so I just really kind of a blended, you know, sociology, psychology, blend there. And I really dove in quick. I was doing a lot of activism. I, you know, was really into sustainability. Once you start exploring sustainability, environmental impacts, you start to realize, oh my gosh, the impact on humans. And you start to see all of these patterns of things that are just not equal for everybody, that they're just by simply treating people well, it isn't, you know, that isn't equity. You know, just realizing that, kind of like peeling back the layers of an onion, you start, you know, you start to realize, oh, I care about people, and you peel back more layers. Oh, wait, this isn't set up right. Like, why is the public school set up this way? Or, you know, why do some people have access to certain things but not others? And then you peel back more layers until you start to, you know, take a deeper dive. And I think once you learn all of those pieces, it's hard to go back and not see it or not understand or not try to learn more or hear more from other people's lived experiences.
Lauren, I really like how you just talked about how the more you learned about other people's experiences, your inclination wasn't to question the validity of those experiences, but to question why they were even happening to begin with. And I just love that. And I really want to highlight that, because you really realize that there was something bigger going on, that people shouldn't be having such inequities and such disparities in their life. And so instead of acting like that wasn't true or challenging the validity of it, you said, no, we need to know why it's happening, because it's not, that's not helpful to any of us.
And what we can do to change that, right?
Yeah.
I actually, you know, when focus a little bit on when you talked about empathy and how that's just been modeled for you your entire life by your family and the people that you've surrounded yourself with. And I can say that as your colleague, I see that like every single day come through. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I look up to, because that doesn't come naturally for me. And we've talked about that that we, you and I, and I think some of our team, we're on the opposite ends of that spectrum, that I am a very process-oriented individual. So yes, empathy comes into play. It's just not like what I lead with, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I know that that is something that is in everything that you do, mm-hmm. And all the work that you do. And that I think is so valuable for our office.
Oh, thank you. It's really nice to hear.
Well, it has been so nice to I really did not expect to learn more things about you. I thought we were just providing the rest of the world the opportunity to learn more about you.
You're
but
right?
It's pretty cool to kind of reflect on what resonates with all of us in terms of this work. And like I said before, we're all so different. I've had such different life experiences, and yet we've all gravitated to this field, and we all can see how some of our different experiences have really created some common experiences for all three of us. It's been really interesting.
Thanks, Lauren. I'm so glad that the audience is getting a chance to get to know you just the way we know you.
Me too.
As we wrap up our conversation, Lauren, you know, just talking about the experiences that you've had the last like 2, 3, 4 years since the beginning of the pandemic and everything that you've gone through, you've come to the other side. We'd love to kind of hear from you, like what you've learned throughout your experience.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, what I've learned most through this whole experience is that, you know, don't let what's happening now be how you define yourself forever, right? That once you get through, you know, things may be tough right now. Like my grandmother kind of always said, this too shall pass. But right. I think it was so hard sometimes to not get out of my own mind and my own narrative that I was creating for myself. You know, some days like, oh, this is horrible. Like you're in such a hard spot. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to really take a step back. Sometimes just feel those emotions, right? Because that was important too. But also just kind of like, all right, yeah, well, you're feeling all this because this is feeling really hard. And it is because it is hard. You know, it's feeling hard because it is hard. Mm-hmm. And so just taking, you know, each day, moving a little bit more slowly, right? Like not reacting so quickly, taking time to just be more present in the moment and taking time to think about how people are helping and supporting, and that this is a little bit of a difficult spot, but it's not always going to be this way. And that's really, you know, what got me through and continues to get me through some of these challenging days or situations or difficult times.
Yeah, I mean, your kids are 2 and 7. Yeah, you're in for a lot more difficulties and
I mean, just this morning alone, I tried to get out the door on time. I had to drop my kids off early to get to campus, and my son decided that it was time for him to, you know, take a minute to possibly, you know, use the restroom. And I'm like, we really got to go. But I mean, I had no choice. He had to do what he had to do.
He had to go too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. He's like, he was so kind about it. He's like, Mommy, I need one more minute, please. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I really, you know, I just don't know what each day is going to bring. But yeah, I just kind of try to take each day as it comes.
Yeah. That is good advice for all of us. Yes. Well, thank you so much, Lauren. This has been just such an amazing conversation. It's been so nice to get to know you even better than I thought I already did. But, yeah, I know you even better now, and I'm so glad that you could spend this time with us and that the world gets to learn about you in a whole other way, too.
Well, thank you. This has been an awesome experience. I'm so glad that you all invited me here.
Thanks, Lauren.
Well, Toil, that was a really, really special episode to be able to talk a little bit more in depth with Warren. As we already said, we both got to know her, better, which I don't know that I was expecting that. I learned some new things and got to know her. And I think, really hearing some of her stories and experiences, I particularly appreciated her talking about kind of just thinking and growing up with the thought and the belief that if as long as you just work hard, you'll be able to achieve whatever. And we all resonated with that because we've all been given that message, right? Just work hard. And I think that, I really appreciated delving into that more because I found myself remembering something I heard once from another speaker at a conference where they said how success is not just hard work.
Yeah.
Success is hard work plus system support.
Right.
Right? And that idea that you have to have also some sort of systemic support for your work, for what you're trying to do, in order to really be able to move up or, to accomplish things or whatever. Really, unfortunately, in this society with all the inequities, hard work alone is not enough.
Yeah, I agree. That's something that really resonated with me, too, because, the one thing that I connected with Lauren on is this experiences of first generation.
Mm-hmm.
She and I are both first generation, which is, again, something that I knew about her, but I got to learn a little bit more about some of her experiences. But as first generation individuals going through college or first time in the workforce, you do learn. That's the message that you get, is that work hard and you'll advance, right? But as you just mentioned, that sometimes that alone is not enough and that you need additional components to actually get to the next level, which some of them does come from that systemic support or policies or procedures or whatever that is.
Or information.
Right.
Networking, awareness, modeling, all those things that you may very well be advancing, but you're not necessarily advancing with access to the same opportunities that other people are because you don't have other people around you who are modeling that or, kind of telling you who's good to know, what's good to know, what isn't. You're just kind of, frankly, just lumping along.
Right.
Trying to do, not even realizing that there's these other things that other people are getting that you're not getting.
Right. And it's this idea, we talked a lot about this, working harder versus working smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Some people learn to work smarter much earlier, right?
Yeah.
Because you said that it's things that you've learned from others, you have role models, things, networking that you've done that where others teach you. And a lot of times first generation individuals don't get that. And so it's, you do eventually get to the point where you can work smarter, but it takes you a lot longer
it
to
does.
Get there.
It does. And I did really like that we were kind of thinking about first generation in the context of the workplace.
Yeah.
Because we do tend to only hear about that in the context of school.
Sure.
And it really was important to realize how that is going to follow you in your professional career. And all the more reason why I think when people are in positions of management positions, supervisor, or the opportunity to mentor, that you're kind of making yourself aware of that, right? That you might be dealing with an early career professional who hasn't had some of those same opportunities, and you might want to, spend a little extra time sort of making sure, not assuming what they know or don't know, and kind of taking time to really help them with their professional development, because they may not think to ask for some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think another point that we talked about that really kind of sticks with me is the idea, as we mentioned in our conversation, Lauren's gone through a lot over the last few years, not only in terms of the pandemic, but also her life and how it's changed.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that sometimes you can't push through everything, right? And that's the other message that we receive. So a lot of women receive that message, just keep going, keep going. And sometimes you can't push through. And that it's okay to just take the day and feel the discomfort, feel all of the emotions, right?
Yes.
Whatever you're experiencing to get to the other side.
Yeah. No, I it's funny because that was literally the next thing I was going to bring up too, was that part of the conversation. Because yes, it's important to be optimistic. Yes, it's important to really demonstrate strength and resilience and all that. However, there is also just the reality that if you don't allow yourself to acknowledge, this isn't good right now.
Right.
This is not okay. This is not, I'm not going through anything easy right now. This is hard. And I have a right to say that it's hard.
Yep.
I have a right to ask for help, And I really thought it was very poignant when she said that she does consider herself to be a very glass half full kind of person. But she also has learned that you can't ignore the discomfort.
Correct.
Sometimes you do just need to allow yourself to sit with it, to be in the present moment with the uncomfortableness.
Right.
And that's actually going to be one of your best ways of then getting through it and right. coming out on the other side.
And I mean, and then tied to that was this idea that don't let what's happening now define you forever, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. what you're experiencing now are all of the emotions, all of the yes. discomfort, but that is not necessarily where you're going to stay
right.
for the rest of your life, right? And right. so don't let that define you. And so I kind of really like that message too.
And not dwelling on thinking that something is a failure.
Correct.
Or, you know, I mean, it, to your point, it's recognizing that this is, for whatever reason, I am going through this right now.
Right.
And I need to just allow that to happen and figure out what I can take from it. Right. And then, no, it's not going to last forever.
Right.
Not going to last forever, which I think is important.
Yeah. And of course, we can't, I don't think we can end this recap without really reminding our audience of the importance of Women's History Month
mm-hmm.
that is happening this month. And
yeah.
the theme of this year is so important to us because this is who we are.
Who
it's
we
what
are.
We do,
what
right?
We do.
And so the theme, to remind everybody again, is women who advocate for equity, diversity, and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's who we are. That's what we do. And we will continue to do that work.
That's right. And I think what we all learned, or at least were reminded of today, is this generally isn't work that you necessarily set out to do.
Right.
But it's often whatever's going on in your own life and whatever your own life experiences are that have sort of naturally propelled you
right.
into caring about this, not just for yourself, but for other people.
Right. And, that, well. And we learned that from Lauren's work story. Mm-hmm. I think our audience has learned that about you and I as
yeah.
well, that this
mm-hmm.
is not something we set out to
no.
do. It's just something that kind of what we fell into.
Right. Yep.
And I think we enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy Women's History Month, Toil.
You too. And to our audience, happy Women's History Month, everyone. Thank you all for listening. This podcast is a production of the Department of Inclusion and Belonging in collaboration with the Cornell Broadcast Studio. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts and rate and submit a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps new listeners find us and the show. For latest updates on diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging at Cornell, be sure to visit diversity.cornell.edu. My name is Toral Patel.
And my name is Erin Sambuchase. We would also like to thank our co-producer and sound engineer, Bert Odom Reed, as always, for making us sound amazing each and every episode.
Thanks Bert.